Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Welcome to Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, legends, and anomalies, the official podcast of Small Town Monsters, a film production company focused on monsters and legends around the United States. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm one of your hosts. I'm joined by my friend and compatriot,
Mark Matzke. That's me. And we have a special guest today.
Andy Matzke. Is that who?
Yeah.
Is that him?
I love the 30 second. Look at this line where it's just dead air while Andy tries to decide if he should say his name. So this week, we're going to talk about Thunderbirds, fittingly, because we just put out the poster for Terror in the Skies. I think we're going to probably broaden the range of what we're talking about outside of the state of Illinois. But we are going to start in Illinois with the discussing the Piassaw bird. But before we get into that, why don't we talk about what Thunderbird descriptions are and kind of what people are seeing when they see a Thunderbird. And I think this is actually really interesting to me because it's something I've recently discovered for myself during the making of the film. But like the Thunderbird descriptions are actually pretty close in terms of like the physical attributes that people are describing tend to be fairly closely connected. That the weirdest thing to me is that they always talk about that line around the neck.
Yeah.
Kind of like is that similar to like a condor?
Correct.
But you know, like in talking to, we conducted two interviews with witnesses and they both claim to have seen, now they weren't like the true, I don't think I could call either of them like a typical Thunderbird report, unfortunately, but the wingspan and the way they said it flew with them was really similar. So I think the other thing I've recently found is that there are many reports of people seeing these things, staring at them threateningly. In one case, this girl woke up in the middle of the night and there was one standing outside her window looking in, and they had these red eyes. And apparently this is connected to a, some sort of like a folktale urban legend, I guess you'd call it, like a Mexican urban legend. And I have to thank Derek Hayes for turning me on to that, because he actually sent me audio that I'm using in our Terror in the Skies movie, and a lot of the audio he sent me was from witnesses who described seeing a creature that had like a 20-foot wingspan and these glowing red eyes that seemed to stare very menacingly at people.
Is that typically the range, about 20-foot wingspan, that you'd make it a Thunderbird?
Both the people we interviewed were 20 feet, which puts it in the range of like a small aircraft. Like probably not quite at aircraft size, but you're getting close, like a 20-foot wingspan end to end. I mean, like we interviewed Jeff Byers, who's a friend of both of us, and he talked about seeing something late in the evening that when it unfurled its wings, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like he was in the middle of the road and the wings tip to tip were covering the road. And it's funny because like, you know, I don't think there's anything inherently scary about birds. So the Thunderbird subject to me has never been about terror, ironically, given the name of our movie. But like, when you get into some of the weirder stories, like those, you know, one of the stories he sent me was from a girl who was driving through the desert and they saw blood staining the road, and they drove a little further. And there was so much blood on the road. That's what drew their attention. There was so much blood on the road. They'd been seeing rabbits and deer and stuff, but there was blood coating the road. And it looked like something had been kind of like drug across this road. Oh. So they looked off to the side of the road in the direction of where the blood had gone. And there was what they thought was like a 5 foot tall or shorter man. And they thought it was strange for a kid to be out there. And then it like turned and it had these bright red eyes. It unfurled its wings and took off over the car, and they said it was like the size of a small airplane. And their incident was strange because they also experienced some missing time and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there does seem to be a paranormal element to the Thunderbird phenomena, although the stories that I've been looking into don't necessarily go in that direction, but I have discovered in the last few days that there are a lot of very bizarre sort of paranormal aspects to it that I didn't realize existed. Do you have anything to add to like what the typical description of? Because that wasn't a very good example. Well, large feathered eagle.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, the comparisons are generally made to a condor, like you said, even with like a ruffle around the neck, mm-hmm. a darkened color. The thing that you said that I thought was pretty compelling about all those incidents is that since they were on the ground, the witnesses had a sense of scale. Because I've always thought that that's a problem with Thunderbird sightings, is that if you see something just flying through the sky and you don't have a real sense of how far you are away from it or anything to compare it to visually, then it can look bigger than it may actually be. But that's different than seeing something on a road unfurl its wings and then take off. Then all of a sudden you have a number of things to visually compare it to. And like the Piper Cub single engine airplane seems to be a rough comparison size for a lot of these creatures.
Anything to add, Andy, to this?
Not really, but it was interesting that you mentioned the red eyes. I've never heard that. I've just heard like the large eagle.
I hadn't either till this week. And that anytime you get into the red eye stuff, it like takes things in a weird direction. Mm-hmm. I find it's probably worth mentioning too. Historically, Thunderbirds are probably the next to something like Champ. They're probably the oldest cryptid or one of the oldest cryptid legends that exist in the U.S. because there's reports going all the way back to, you know, the 1600s of like large birds, 1400s even. But even when Lewis and Clark, this is something we found during making the movie. I'm going to be, for some listeners, this is probably going to be frustrating because I'm going to probably mostly be talking about Illinois because it's where I just came from. But we discovered like even during the Lewis and Clark expeditions, like there were reports of large birds in that general area. We're going to talk about the Piasaw bird, but one really interesting thing to mention about where the Piasaw bird was located supposedly is that Alton is right along the Mississippi River. It's got some weird similarities to Point Pleasant. It's a place where multiple rivers connect. It's a place that's been sort of plagued with bad luck. It's got its own Native American curse supposedly placed on it, and it's got this winged mascot that is they're very well known for. It's also a place where eagles nest there during the winter along the cliffs that dot the river there. So it's like a very bizarre. It you know, we had spent all this time in like the farmlands in Illinois, and then all of a sudden you're in Alton, and it's this. It's like being in a coastal town or something because the river's so huge. It's right there. And there's these massive cliffs on both sides. Everything feels very old, like almost prehistoric down there, fittingly. So I want to talk about really quick the Piasaw bird. And we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but this is my favorite piece of historical sort of Thunderbird lore. Although I may or may not include an audio clip here of Ken Gerhard sort of debunking the idea that the Piesaw bird even was a bird. But
yeah, that Mothman comparison is blowing my mind right now. Because it wasn't until you said that.
There's a lot more to it as well. And Troy, I had Troy Taylor talk about that specifically. And he goes through all the different points that connect the two towns together in a way that's it's really bizarre. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of similarities between both of them. They're both industrial towns. I mean, obviously, it's common along a river, but
sure.
But there's a lot of very bizarre similarities. But the Piesaw was a Native American dragon, according to this, depicted in one of two murals painted by Native Americans on bluffs above the Mississippi River. The legend was that there was a this massive monster. Again, like there's some back and forth here on whether or not this creature was actually a bird or not. But according to legend, or the legend we have now, it was a massive bird that was cannibalistic, that would devour Native Americans that lived in the area. They painted there was a cave that supposedly existed there, that when the one of the very early explorers discovered this cave, and supposedly it was littered with bones, like thousands of human skeletons and things like that, the Native Americans painted a mural of the Piesaw on the side of this cliff, and when they would go down the river, they would fire arrows at the mural. I'm not trying to sell the movie, but in the movie, it's going to be a very specific like explanation of this, the legend, and because there's a whole thing behind it that's really fascinating. But the mural was eventually lost. They don't actually know where that original mural went. So the mural you see now is not an original. In fact, it's the second of two reproductions. So there was another reproduction that was originally done on one of the cliffs, and then that was originally gone. I think there's pieces of it in the museum there. So I don't know if they blew it up or what, but there's a piece of it in the local museum that you can see. And then there's the mural that they've painted today, and you can go see. And all it does really is help solidify the fact that that particular geographical area is very tied into large birds, like whether they're natural, just a large eagle. Like there's eagles all over the place down there. When you go in their local tourism center, everything is eagle. There's an eagle on everything. There's either the Piesaw bird or an eagle. So that's what I meant about like the way Point Pleasant embraces the Mothman. Alton kind of does that with the Piesaw. So in fact, their local high school teams are their mascots, the Piesaw. So
is it really?
Yeah, they have it. It's on all the merch and everything. So nice. I bought Adrian, Tommy, and I all have matching Piesaw bird baseball tees. that area feels very, very, very much like a place where you could see something like that existing. But that's the very Cliff Notes version of the Piesaw bird legend. What other like historical Thunderbird stuff do you have? Did you come across any other geeky?
No, not to the degree of the Piesaw. I mean, that's sort of the gold standard of it. I mean, what I'm thinking of also is the Lawndale, you know, Martin Lowe or Marlon Lowe.
Yeah.
Did you guys got there, right? Did you go?
Yeah, So as long as we're talking Illinois, one other thing I wanted to mention in connection, Point Pleasant. I mean, Point Pleasant wasn't just known for the Mothman, just like Alton isn't known for the Piesaw. So if you want a connection between the Piesaw and Point Pleasant, you could probably go to the 1940s where they started having sightings of the Birdman, which was this winged creature that was much more like a traditional Thunderbird, the way that they described it anyway. So you've got in Alton, you've got the Piesaw, in Point Pleasant, you've got the Birdman. Then you come forward in time, Alton's got the 1948 Thunderbird flap that erupts all over the place. Point Pleasant has the Mothman incident. And there's similarities in the fact that they don't last very long. It's a very set period of time that these sightings take place, and then it's over. Lawndale. So, yeah, I feel like I'm jumping ahead, though, if we get to Lawndale.
Oh, okay.
There was this 1948 stuff, and I guess we still want to talk about PA and all that, so I don't want to
spend
a ton of time on
this. No, that's good. But I guess I go to Lawndale always in my mind because that's how Mysterious America starts. That's like the first case study that you get in the book is...
So you know why that is? It's like his brother had... Him and his brother had interviewed Marlon and they had gone to Lawndale. But before we get to Lawndale, the one thing we discovered is that these Thunderbird sightings happen in flaps, just like UFO flaps in Illinois. And they started in... Well, I mean, there's reports forever, but like the big flap that kind of kicked off the whole thing is this flap that... Lauren uncovered from 1948 that happened in Alton, Illinois, where people were seeing just large winged birds. I mean, classic Thunderbird. There was a guy that was actually three members of the local military saw something flying overhead. Some lady in her front yard saw. I mean, it's like one of those things where it's just a series of these bizarre events that happened in 1948 over a, I want to say like 7 or 8 months. The most interesting story to me was one that involved some men because of all the sightings happening. There was some guys that were like armed, like an armed posse, and they went out to kill a Thunderbird and they did. And Lauren wrote about it in the Mothman book, his first Mothman book. They supposedly killed it and then they freaked out because they were afraid they were going to get in trouble for killing some sort of endangered animal or something. And they burned the body. So that was a really interesting story that I never heard of. But anyway, the next flap, so you've got that flap in the 40s, and then and it is preceded by sightings close by that took place in the very, very late 1800s or very early 1900s, including one case where supposedly some kids were outside playing at a school and a giant eagle basically came down, grabbed this little boy and flew off, and the kid was never seen again.
Whoa.
So that's another cool story that I thought.
Where was that out
that, of? That's Mississippi, but it's right on the other side of the river.
Ah. That's crazy.
And that's a Troy Taylor story that he wrote about in his Monsters of Illinois book. Yeah. So then you jump ahead into the 70s, and I can't remember the exact year. So I almost want to say it's like 77, but... Mm-hmm. Lawndale, Illinois is this tiny, I can't even call it a town. It's like, it'd be like Fowlk, like a Fowlk sized village. It sits off a highway. There's really nothing indicating you're in Lawndale. But it was also my favorite part and like saddest part of the trip for me was like this little town where like apparently, so we're outside filming and this guy rolls up on like a Jazzy and he thought he was going to like kick us out, but he ended up being super cool. And he was like telling me about what the town was like back in the day. He was telling me in the 40s and 50s that it was huge. He said there were four grocery stores, three gas stations. There was a huge dance hall and all this stuff. And today there's one bar and a post office that's in a mobile home. They've put like their post offices in like a mobile home.
Okay.
And there's a couple hundred people there. And he told me that the grain elevator that's there is going out next year. So he said it's the big employer right now is this grain elevator and it's going out. So all these people are going to lose their job. And that's like one of those things that helps solidify for me, like why I'm so fascinated by this stuff. It's always been about like the people and the towns more so than the monsters. And like I got really... attracted to that town, and then I went online and I bought one of those picture books. I still haven't got it yet, but it's apparently has like all the pictures of what the town looked like back in the day, so I'm really excited about it. But anyway, Lawndale had its own flap in the 70s, the most famous incident being the incident in which a Marlon Lowe, who was young, I mean like 8 years old or something at the time, was supposedly picked up and carried by a very large Thunderbird type creature. And that kicked off kind of a rash of reports that started coming in from around Lawndale. It kind of culminated with this guy, Texas John Huffer, who passed away, but he apparently came to the area to shoot footage, I guess, of a Thunderbird, and apparently succeeded to some extent, depending on who you're talking to. Lauren Coleman's convinced that is not legitimate footage of a Thunderbird, but Ken Gerhardt is very much convinced it is something that's an unidentifiable large bird. So you can find that footage very easily, actually. If you go on YouTube and just search like Illinois Bigfoot footage or Texas John, you can find that footage. But it's interesting, but it doesn't, it's very inconclusive because birds, it's like you said, like, it's hard to tell scale. Like, we're finding this out with creating the special effects for the movie. Like, if you, it's hard to make a bird look big because it's just, it's in the sky. There's nothing for scale. Like, you stick a tree in front of it or behind it, and it's still hard to tell, like, mm-hmm. how big it is. You almost have to have, like, a person or something in yeah. a shot to make it make sense. But anyway, yeah, the flaps that have taken place there have been going on for centuries, and they seem to move in these weird patterns. And then the most recent, I guess you would say, would be the Chicago Mothman stuff. Cause it, at the end of the day, it's still a winged cryptid that's hanging out in the state of Illinois. That's captured a lot of attention.
Is there debate with the Chicago sightings about, is it a Mothman? Is it a bird?
No, one seems to be talking about the Thunderbird thing, which I think is really bizarre because mm-hmm. That is the first place my mind goes to, is like, well, I mean, it's taking place in a state known for winged cryptids. I mean, same with Wisconsin. Wisconsin is too. There's tons of Thunderbird reports. Linda Godfrey has all kinds of Thunderbird reports from Wisconsin. But no, I mean, no one we talked to really had drawn that connection. And when I would ask them about it, they were like, they seemed a little like weirded out by it. Like that was the first time they had that thought. Hmm. You know, it's, which is strange to me, but yeah, no one that I talked to is really drawing the line to the Mothman of Point Pleasant actually being some sort of Thunderbird. We need to talk about PA, because PA has its own. Do they call it a triangle? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they do.
Okay,
and I don't know the name of it, but I just read it. Yeah. You're right, there is one, and what's really cool about PA is that there's definitely a couple groupings of reports. I mean, you definitely have your classic Thunderbird, just giant bird, but then you have a whole lot of pterodactyl prehistoric type birds as well. And I think we're going to let that group go for this recording. We probably will return to it at some point.
But I mean, it's hard. It actually is really hard to separate the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, I know that the witnesses we interviewed both were referring to what they had seen as a Thunderbird, but they talked about the second witness almost talked more about like how it seemed to have leathery skin and mm-hmm. this weird like cone going off the back of its head.
Right.
But they still refer to them as a Thunderbird. So, and he said it was leathery, but it still had feathers. So it still gets complicated in separating the two.
Sure. And even when it comes to the motion of the creature itself, so many of these Thunderbird reports that I looked at just for this, one feature is the witnesses say things like they never saw it flap its wings, which just seems completely bizarre to me. If you're, I mean, it's one thing to see a condor gliding at these, you know, high altitudes, but if it's jumping off of the ground and gaining traction and flying, but it's not flapping its wings. I have no idea. I don't understand how that works. I mean, to me, that goes in a weird direction.
It's Mothman, too. Mm-hmm. Mothman didn't flap its wings, supposedly. It just
right.
took off straight into the sky like a, they always talked about, like a helicopter or something. But I see that. I haven't heard it. So one interesting thing, I want to talk about the PA stuff, but one interesting thing is the fact that a lot of these Thunderbird sightings take place preceding storms. Do you know about all that stuff? Mm-hmm. Do you know about all that stuff, Andy?
Yeah, a little.
Okay.
Because isn't that where the name came from?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, like, thank you. Thank you. The reports, especially, like, Native American reports, it was always, like, preceding a storm. And supposedly, like, Native Americans said that was because they were a bad omen and they were bringing, you know, but Ken Gerhardt said that it makes a lot of sense because if they're traveling in front of the storms, because they're riding the thermal updraft that would be created by that storm behind them, So they're actually, which I thought was
that,
really
that
cool.
Makes, that makes a lot of sense.
And it would, if you're talking about, and the reason he said they would have to do that is because they're so big. Mm-hmm. Like if you talk about a bird that weighs, a bird that's that big would have to weigh like, if you're talking about a bird that could pick up an 80-pound kid, which is what Marlon Lowe weighed at the time, they pick up they can pick up up to half their body weight. So that bird would have to be approaching 200 pounds, you know, like 160, 200 pounds in that area. A bird that is that large would need, first of all, it's going to need massive wings, but even then you're going to need some sort of jet propulsion to get going. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about like being able to, it also goes back to the cliffs in Alton. And if these things hang out on the cliffs, it might be because they can hop right off and then, you know, sail instead of having to take off from the ground.
They're gliding at that point.
It's really interesting. I came into this not knowing what I thought of the Thunderbird as a cryptid, and I'm coming away from it thinking this is actually one of the most believable of the cryptids that we've looked into. You know, like I still don't know where I stand on a lot of these, but with the Thunderbird, I came away from it thinking like there's nothing that Alton's known for two things, three things. It's known because it's the home of the pious Allbird. It's known because it is the hometown of Miles Davis, and it's known for, I can't remember the guy's name, but it's known for being the birthplace of the tallest man who ever lived.
Robert Wadlow?
Yeah, Wadlow. 11 feet.
Something like
when
that.
When he died, 10 feet tall. I mean, if you think about, okay, a person can grow that big. Why can't a bird become abnormally large? Like, I'm not even necessarily saying that I think that there's a species of bird that all grow to like 20 feet. But like, why couldn't there be a freakishly huge condor that is out there? And I know condors supposedly aren't in Illinois. Not that match to the description that people give of this one, but, or the Thunderbird. But still, to me, it makes a certain amount of sense that there could be some sort of, like, not a mutant, but a mutant, like a mutated,
an anomaly.
Perhaps. Yeah. Oh, there you go. We got to the anomaly.
Yeah, anomaly.
There you go.
Yeah, but like Thunderbirds, really, they're just a giant animal, which isn't that, you know, hard to believe. They're one of the most believable things. I completely agree with that because there's not much that you can say, oh, well, that doesn't exist because there are giant birds.
And there's a history, like Bigfoot, there's a Native American history of these things existing, unlike a lot of the other cryptids we come across. I would put Bigfoot and Thunderbird kind of on the same level because there's this Native American cultural history of them. They all have legends about them. I mean, in a way, like Thunderbirds are almost more believable than Bigfoot because you've got the sightings going back probably as far as Bigfoot, but you've got more people, believable people, historically claiming to see these things. You also don't necessarily have the bizarre muddying of the historical waters that happens with Bigfoot reports when you get into the 80s or 1880s is what I meant, but like 1800s and early 1900s, because you've got very questionable sources talking about thunder or Bigfoot reports, you know, like wild man reports and all that stuff.
Gorillas.
Whereas with Thunderbirds, you have some of that with like the, I think though most of the hoaxes that revolve around Thunderbirds are more recent, with like the historical photo of like the cowboys with the one strung up outside the barn at the OK Corral and all that stuff. Like that muddies the waters now, but back, if you look historically, there really wasn't this huge preponderance of reports coming in of like massive winged creatures carrying people off necessarily.
And there's something that is, if you don't look at it from a cryptozoological perspective, is like culturally accepted in a relatively normal way by Native Americans and things. So if you do then make the connections to the sightings that are happening, you know, whenever, that it makes sense. And, like, the connections can be made to where it seems like this could be an explanation for what is seen.
And the two witnesses I talked to, the thing that struck me about both of them is they weren't again, it came back to Bigfoot for me. They're what they were describing wasn't anything. It wasn't insane. They weren't claiming that like this giant bird like tried to pick them up and carry them off. Jeff was driving, you know, late in the evening. This thing was in the road and then it took off over his car. The other guy was out hunting, and actually like swooped down over them and took off, and he saw it at incredibly close range. And the interesting thing about him is he's like an avid outdoorsman. He actually owns like 300 acres in Illinois that he's donated to like a local wildlife club and all this stuff. But he's a hunter. He owns his own hunting area. He works for like a very prominent outdoor gear sales company. He knows animals. And he also has nothing to gain by telling people he saw a giant like 20-foot wingspan creature flying around overhead. In fact, he said he's pretty much been ridiculed for it nonstop since it happened. But talking to those witnesses like was really made it was like eye opening in a way, because they both were so convinced of what they've seen, and what they saw was nothing truly out of the ordinary. It didn't seem they weren't trying to embellish the story, and it just seemed like an encounter with something they'd never seen before.
Yeah,
very interesting.
Well, here's a quintessential Pennsylvania case, and I think it'll help set the stage for, or just add some detail to what we've been talking about. The thing I like about this story in particular is that you've got multiple witnesses, and anytime you have multiple people seeing these things for anything, I think it's a strength. So this was August 26, 2010, about 8:10 p.m. Just as it was getting dark, four people were sitting around in a yard having a barbecue, enjoying the weather, and suddenly their attention was drawn skyward by a sound like a swish, or as one witness stated, like air coming straight down. Several of the observers, almost at the same time, yelled out exclamations because they were startled to see a tremendously large bird flying over a tree in the yard about 30 to 40 feet overhead. As the bird passed the tree, it veered slightly to the right and went straight down the road ahead, maintaining a low level path. When first observed, the massive wings of the creature were in an upright position and were beginning to drop slowly, almost as if they were rolling to the bottom. The swish sound could be heard when the wings were moving. Powerful bird had flown about 125 yards down the road, at which time the wings were coming back up. The creature was observed as it continued to move steadily down the road, passing just above the rooftop of a house, with its wings flapping slowly and steadily about 3 to 4 times until it reached a group of trees about a quarter of a mile away, where it was lost from sight. And Stan Gordon went on the scene, interviewed two of the witnesses where they saw it. They were able to provide a detailed description. As it passed over, it appeared as though it was peering below, its head and beak positioned downward. They estimated that if the bird was on the ground, it would stand between 4.5 to 5 feet tall. It was all dark. It was very bulky and husky. And it continues on from there. But that's...
Husky, wow.
Yeah.
It's very insulting to the poor bird.
But plus size.
Yeah. If it has to go to Walmart, yeah. It's husky. We don't have the info in front of us, but there's an area in Pennsylvania that's like known for Thunderbird sightings, and they have like their own triangle name for it. But in researching Terror in the Skies, I did keep coming across, is it Harrisburg, PA, or Harrisonburg?
Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm. Harrisburg, PA. There's at least a number of sightings that I'm aware of from that area. It makes me wonder how far that is from Aaron Shakti's sighting, which is on the Chestnut Ridge, along the Chestnut Ridge. Aaron had a sighting of some sort of large winged bird right along the Chestnut Ridge in PA in the early 2000s, and his was kind of a classic Thunderbird description. It wasn't anything prehistoric, right?
Not really.
Just a large bird.
It was like sitting down and like had its wings across.
What did he say when he saw it?
Judas Priest.
Judas Priest. So yeah, this isn't relegated to Illinois. In fact, I don't even know if Illinois is typically thought of in relation to Thunderbird reports. We found Thunderbird reports from the Bridgewater Triangle that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of Thunderbird reports that took place, a Thunderbird report that took place in Whitehall. Whitehall PD officers said they saw this massive, now their report, it was more like the pterodactyl type creature, but this large bird, they just saw it nest, but aloft in a tree and sit there before taking off. So their reports kind of run, I think they run globally. Like Ken Gerhard gets into some really weird stuff with like the glow, the way they give off like a glow. There's an episode, and I think it might have been Monster Quest, but there's an episode of Destination Truth as well where they talk about that, how there's these legends of large winged birds that seem to glow at night. And there's apparently some sort of legitimate like biological reason for that that Ken's come across as well.
I looked up an article online, and it says they're in the north central region of Pennsylvania is where Thunderbirds are seen. In Cameron, Clinton, Lincoming, McKean, and Tigon counties. I have no clue what that last one. How'd you pronounce that one? The last one with the T? It's like right there. How'd you pronounce
Tioga.
It? Tioga? I can't read
it. Tioga? Is that right? Does that sound right?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. I read it completely wrong. It also mentions that southwestern part of the state, which is Chestnut Ridge.
Yeah.
Thank you, PennLive.
The most famous Native American totem is the Thunderbird. Like when I think of the totem, that's what I think of as the winged, and that's their Thunderbird. I mean, like, actually, it's interesting because in reading, I'm working on the Trail of Bigfoot right now, and I'm kind of cutting some of Kathy's sections of the film where she's talking about Native American cultural history. She sent me a ton of scans of like totems and stuff the other day. They actually have, a lot of them have a Thunderbird right above Bigfoot. And I know there's also eagles on their totems as well, but this seems to be, to me anyway, like I was trying to tell the difference between the two, and it almost looked to me like they were, you know, it was the Thunderbird, like their classic Thunderbird. There's Thunderbird tribe. There's a Thunderbird tribe in Illinois as well. So the history is there. And, you know, there's so many like really fascinating older stories about these things existing. And unfortunately, it really, or not unfortunately, I guess for us, it's kind of cool, but there is that history or part of the legend anyway of these things carrying off children. Like that goes all the way back to that story I told you about from Mississippi with the school kid getting carried off. That's something that comes up over and over again, which is really interesting when you get to the 70s and the Marlon Lowe incident happens. Now I will say, like, Marlon Lowe came forward with his story, and it was kind of like a Caton situation. Like he came forward with his story, and they ridiculed them terribly. He became known as the bird boy at school. Like Lauren, the way Lauren told it, and I don't know if this is how it happened, but this is how Lauren told it, is when Lauren met him, he had, he said it, bright red hair. And Lauren saw him 3 years later, and he had gray hair as a kid. And Lauren said it was from the ridicule he took over the incident. And I will say the guy we asked, the guy that in Lawndale that we talked to, we asked him where's Marlon's house, and he pointed it out to me, and he said, "Don't believe anything you hear about the Lowe family." He said they were drinking when it happened. They were all drunk, and they didn't know what they were seeing. So whether or not whether or not that's true, I don't know. But I will, you know, like if we believe what was originally written, there were two other kids there at least with Marlon that corroborated his story in addition to the adults who I do believe were drinking. I think even Lauren says in his interview they were drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, but take it with a grain of salt regardless. But, you know, from everything I've read and heard about Marlon is that that incident did not play out well for him.
For him, yeah.
Anything you want to, anything you want to add?
I don't know. No, I think with Bigfoot, with Thunderbirds, I mean, it's, the native folklore connection, I guess the basic decision you have to make is, are these folklore stories based on something true and real, or were they just making them up out of whole cloth? And I don't know. That's not satisfactory to me to think that they just imagined a giant bird. I mean, I think there's clearly something in their experience and in their past that they were building these stories around. And the idea that it continues to be there and kind of do the things that it did in those folkloric stories, like pick children up, just argues for the fact that there's something to it.
It has to be inspired by something, whether it was just, you know, I mean, like the Native American stuff. Because whether it was just, it was something like a big bird or something they actually saw, these stories came from somewhere. And like with Bigfoot, it can't just be they made it up. That seems a little too like an easy answer. Like, they just made it up. But with Thunderbirds, that honestly, it could be a fact, but I don't think that's true, because there are people today still saying they see that aren't people who would necessarily know about, you know, Native American lore on their mythic creatures.
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing I thought of, actually. Marlon Lowe recounting being nearly picked up by a creature. I'm pretty sure that wasn't informed by a legend that started in the late 1800s, that'd be like 5 miles to the south of where he lives, so.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.